You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up after 7, it's Storytelling with a Beat on Snap Judgment. Tonight, Halloween is done, but Snap Judgment still has some scary stories to tell. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, Social Security has been called the third rail of American politics for a long time now. In other words, a warning to politicians, don't touch it. Today, Social Security does have some problems. By many estimates, unless changes are made to Social Security law, the program will only pay 75% of scheduled benefits by the year 2035.
That's what most people agree on. What's still up in the air is the best way to fix it. The two major party presidential candidates have different approaches, as do various public policy groups.
Bridget Madrian joins us now. She's a professor of public policy and corporate management at Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. Bridget, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Well, I want to start with talking about how this problem is framed. And this came up in the third presidential debate. I want to listen to a little bit about how moderator Chris Wallace framed the Social Security question.
Now, the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget has looked at both of your plans, and they say neither of you has a serious plan that is going to solve the fact that Medicare is going to run out of money in the 2020s, Social Security is going to run out of money in the 2030s, and at that time, recipients are going to take huge cuts in their benefits.
So Social Security running out of money in the 2030s, huge cuts in benefits. Is that an accurate portrayal of what's going on with Social Security?
Yes, that's an accurate portrayal if nothing is changed. So under the program as it currently exists, in 2034, all of the trust fund balances will have been spent, and Social Security under current law is constrained to only pay out benefits that would be equal to the tax revenue that is being collected. So if the benefits are not cut and the revenue is not increased, then the benefits that the Social Security Administration will be able to pay will be about 75% of what workers have been promised.
We'll get into some possible specific changes to Social Security and what the candidates are saying about it. But first, big picture, you're describing an outcome that I think nobody wants to see happen, but a lot of people have different opinions on what to do. Is the political will there to make significant changes that are going to change that scenario?
Well, that's a good question. I would say that from my standpoint, Social Security has been surprisingly absent from the political debate, at least among the presidential candidates. You led with the question by Chris Wallace on Social Security, and I think what is so remarkable about that question is that it was the very last question in the third debate. So it was snuck in at the end and, you know, barely discussed in all three of the presidential debates, and really hasn't been a focus of much of the discussion on the campaign trail either, at least in terms of what the media is covering. So it doesn't seem to be really high on the policy agenda. The way policy is often done in Washington is it takes a crisis in order for something to happen. And it's hard to motivate, strong support for change today for a problem that many perceive as not being a problem until 2034. But of course, the real problem is that if we wait until 2034, it's a big problem. But if we do something today, it's much less painful to address it, 20 years in advance.
We're talking about the future of Social Security and the present of Social Security policy with Bridget Madrian from Harvard University. Let's make the most of that debate moment and hear a little bit of what each of the candidates had to say when asked what would you do, in effect, about a Social Security and Medicare in that question. Here's, first of all, Donald Trump, part of his response.
I'm cutting taxes. We're going to grow the economy. It's going to grow at a record rate.
But that's not going to help on entitlement.
It's going to totally help you. And one thing we have to do, repeal and replace the disaster known as Obamacare. It's destroying our country. It's destroying our businesses, our small business, and our big businesses.
So the rest of his answer there focused on the Affordable Care Act. But as he hinted at the outset, he says that his tax plan will grow the economy that economic growth is going to help fund Social Security. Can you explain what he and his campaign have said and whether that is plausible?
I think most economists think that that is not a very plausible solution to the problem. So, first of all, the evidence that cutting taxes will grow the economy is controversial. Reagan cut taxes, promised that we would get economic growth in the 1980s, and I think in retrospect, those promises were probably somewhat overblown. So not everyone agrees with that particular tenet. And while growing the economy does lots of wonderful things, that in and of itself is not going to solve the Social Security problems, because if wages go up, the benefits to which workers are entitled will go up as well. So there are more fundamental problems with the system that need to be addressed.
But the idea that a high enough rate of growth, I think economists have said, yeah, if you could sustain a 4% rate of growth, that might bring enough new money into the Social Security trust fund to stave off that 2034 deadline. Is there anything to that?
Well, I mean, we haven't had long-term sustained 4% growth, I mean, for a long time. Even if you got 4% growth for a few years, you know, we have economic cycles. We do well, and then we have a recession, and then we do well, and then we have a recession. So I think it's completely unrealistic to assume that we're going to enter a period of sustained 4% a year growth if that's what it would take to you know, solve the problems in the system.
All right, let's get to Hillary Clinton's answer to that same question in the third debate.
Well, Chris, I am on record as saying that we need to put more money into the Social Security Trust Fund. That's part of my commitment to raise taxes on the wealthy. My Social Security payroll contribution will go up, as will Donald's, assuming he can't figure out how to get out of it. But what we want to do is to replenish the Social Security Trust Fund by making sure that we have sufficient resources. And that will come from either raising the cap and or finding other ways to get more money into it. I will not cut benefits. I want to enhance benefits for low-income workers and for women who have been disadvantaged by the current Social Security system.
So no cuts to benefits, she's saying. Maybe an increase to benefits for people who don't, she says, get enough out of the system. We'll do that in part by bringing in more money from wealthy people, in part by raising the caps on Social Security contributions. Talk about the impact of that, please, Bridget.
Well, if she wants to increase benefits, she will definitely have to increase taxes. And if she wants to, you know, not have to cut benefits in 2034, so increase both the promised benefits and then make sure that you can pay the benefits that have actually been promised, then you would have to have, you know, a non-negligible increase in taxes. I haven't run the numbers for her plan, but you would have to both increase the Social Security payroll tax rate, and you would have to increase the maximum earnings threshold at which earnings are subject to the Social Security tax.
We're talking to Bridget Madrian. She's a professor of public policy and corporate management at Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. She's with us to talk about the future of Social Security and what Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's plans might accomplish when it comes to fixing it.
And we'd love to hear from you on this. Do you have questions about the future of Social Security? Who do you think has the best plan about how to fix it, how to make sure it's solvent? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Harvard University's Bridget Madrian is with us now. We're talking about the future of Social Security and who's got the best ideas about how to fix it.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions about the future of Social Security and the policies needed to extend its lifespan. Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Bridget, before we go to our callers, what would you like to see? What kind kind of plan would help really make a difference in Social Security?
Great question. I spent the last 2 years serving on a commission convened by the Bipartisan Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and the 19 of us who were on that commission spent 2 years coming up with a set of recommendations to make Social Security solvent and also increase the capacity of Americans throughout the income distribution to save for retirement, to supplement their Social Security income. And what we recommend at the end of the day is something that most of the economists that I know who have thought carefully about Social Security generally recommend as well, which is a combination of increasing tax rates, either the payroll tax rate and or the threshold at which payroll taxes are collected, a slight cut in benefits, and that cut in benefits should be done in a way that is having a bigger impact on those who would get the most benefits in the first place, the wealthiest individuals in the economy, and could be done without cutting benefits for people at the low end of the income distribution at all. Slight increase in taxes, slight decrease in benefits, and then increase the normal retirement age so that it is pegged to inflation. So in the Bipartisan Policy Commission report, we recommend increasing the retirement age by 1 month every 2 years. So it would go up an additional 2 years from 62 to 69 over the next 40 years, which we think is, you know, well in line with expected increases in longevity that we've been experiencing for the past century at least. And the Social Security benefits reforms that we propose would actually increase the benefits going to the lowest income Social Security recipients. So the people who need it the most would not have their benefits cut. They would actually have their benefits go up a little bit. Some higher income individuals who can afford a cut in benefits would get a slight decrease in their benefits, but the benefits they would get as a result of the reform proposal are higher than what they would get if the system is insolvent in 2034 and everyone's benefits are cut across the board. So, you know, we think that our proposal can be framed as a win-win. If we do something to solve the problems in the system now, we can make sure that everyone is getting more than they would get if the system goes insolvent in 2034 with a slight increase in taxes today.
And Bridget, I want to bring in a caller now. Brian is with us in Prairie du Chien. Brian, hi.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I heard your interviewee talk about the threshold. She hadn't run the numbers for Ms. Clinton's plan, but what kind of revenues would be raised if the earnings cap was removed and high earners paid on every dollar like most low-income workers do in our economy?
So I don't have a ready answer to your exact question. For the Bipartisan Policy Center recommendation, we had to increase the earnings threshold from where it is today to a little bit below 200,000. So that's not removing it entirely, but it is increasing it quite substantially. And our estimate was that increase in the maximum taxable earnings limit in combination with a 1% increase in the payroll tax rate phased in over the next 10 years and a few other minor changes would be sufficient along with the benefits restructuring to make the system sustainable for the long-term future going forward. So it not only gets us past 2034, but it gets us in a position where, at least for the projections we did, going out at least 75 years, the revenue coming in is sufficient to pay the benefits that are promised. So if you increase the earnings cap, or if you eliminated it completely, you would obviously get even more revenue, but I'm not sure exactly how much more because I haven't run those numbers.
Brian, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Paul in Hiles. Paul, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Paul?
Just doing a little fact-checking. I've heard over the years that various administrations dating back maybe 30 years have taken a total of somewhere around $2 trillion out of the trust funds. A, is that true? And B, can we get it back?
Paul, thanks for that call. Briefly, Bridget, have we been, in effect, raiding the trust fund for the federal budget?
Well, the accounting for Social Security is complicated. So, the way it works is in the past, when contributions have exceeded the payments that Social Security needed to make to beneficiaries, it was never the case that the money was, put in a giant, put underneath a giant mattress stored somewhere in Washington. It was effectively lent to the federal government and used, to finance other government programs. The rest of the government then has a debt obligation to the Social Security system, and so that when Social Security needed to draw down the trust fund, they're, collecting that revenue essentially through higher other taxes today to make up the difference. So can we get the money back? Well, yes, but the only way to get the money back is by raising taxes. So you can either raise Social Security taxes or you can raise income taxes. But, the reality is the only way to get the money back is by raising taxes.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Bridget Madrian, professor of public policy and corporate management at Harvard University. She joined us to talk about the future of Social Security.
A Marine Corps captain is running as a Republican for the 8th District's open congressional seat. Mike Gallagher has both a combat and academic background. He's running to fill the seat being vacated by incumbent Republican Reid Ribble. Patty Murray has this, our second of two profiles on the candidates in that race.
Mike Gallagher is 32 years old and has never held elected office. That didn't keep him from beating two opponents in the August primary. He frequently mentions his military service on the campaign trail, telling a crowd of supporters on primary night that he was ready for his next mission.
I am asking you to deploy me into enemy-occupied territory.
Gallagher served two combat missions in Iraq and rose to the rank of captain. He left the Corps in 2013 and went on to work in Washington as an advisor and then as an advisor for Governor Scott Walker's failed presidential bid. That's how he met incumbent Reid Ribble, who gave Gallagher a primary endorsement. Ribble says he was almost immediately impressed.
I met with him and I remember walking away thinking, wow, for such a young man, he's really, really smart. That was kind of my gut reaction to him. At that point, I didn't know that he had two master's degrees and a PhD, but it was pretty evident that he was a highly educated guy.
Gallagher's PhD is in international relations, but he says his true passion and expertise is in early Cold War history. He spent months at the Eisenhower and Truman presidential libraries doing research for a 500-page dissertation. Gallagher called it
Changing Course, the Sources of Strategic Adjustment.
Chants of I Like Mike break out at rallies, channeling the 1950s slogan used by Ike Eisenhower. Gallagher's ready to talk Cold War anytime, even at an informal campaign event recently in Green Bay.
That period where we really built the national security community in order to deal with the long-term threat posed by the Soviet Union from 1947 onward has always fascinated me, and how men of good faith on both sides of the aisle came together to confront an urgent threat, and we're sort of operating under or using some of the same structures today that were built back then. And I think time has long passed for us to have a similar reassessment and look back at some of the threats we're facing.
Gallagher's not all scholar, even though in his off time he says he reads history books. He also plays guitar and likes to socialize with friends and family. His political role model is Abraham Lincoln. Gallagher says he's always admired the warrior scholar model.
I think you need a balance, right? You know, in the Marine Corps, they teach you you have to exert physical leadership, moral leadership, as well as academic and intellectual leadership, and you have to be balanced on all of those. And so I've tried to do the same in my own approach to leadership. But yes, I'm a nerd, Patty. Thank you for reminding me.
If he is a nerd, Gallagher supporters like outgoing Representative Reed Ribble don't seem to mind.
I don't have any dirt on him at all. I've been trying because I'm really competitive. So I can't find a flaw in this guy, so it bothers me.
When Ribble was elected, he self-imposed a term limit. He's leaving Congress after serving 6 years. Gallagher won't make a similar promise and gives every indication he's eager to enter Congress, even though he calls it a deployment and not a career path. Patty Murray, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can follow the results of that election and everything else going on in Wisconsin around the nation with election night coverage here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Programming starts at 6 o'clock with a special from On Point, then special coverage from NPR. And then starting at 8, as the polls close in Wisconsin, we will have live coverage with analysis and results from around Wisconsin provided by Wisconsin Public Radio's news team and live coverage from NPR's news team looking at the race for president, races for Senate around the country, and control of both houses of Congress. That's election night coverage. You'll find it here on WPR. Stream it, WPR.org, or use the WPR app on your smartphone or tablet.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.